This recording was originally a live conversation which took place at the ETH Entrepreneur Club's 2022 launch event.
And what I would always advise people to find out early is how many ego problems do the people you engage with have? How much do they care to be front and center, to be the first on the list, to be recognized and so on?
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Sylvan.
Well, Marcus, thank you so much for traveling all the way from Berlin to meet us here in Zurich. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You are the chairman and co-founder at Bubble, the market-leading app for language learning. Many of us probably even use it themselves. And you're also part at Wachstumsbegleitung, which offers coaching and consulting for scaling startups. Mm-hmm. Today, before we jump into the topic, I actually want to start with your entrepreneurial drive. You have successfully built and scaled Bubble to immense heights. What is your entrepreneurial drive? Where does it come from?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, We just had the 15th anniversary of founding Babel. And what I would say is it's still the early days. It's not tremendously big. It's a 200 million euro revenue company. And that's just the beginning, I'd say. Entrepreneurial drive, I would say what drives me most is curiosity and the urge to do something that's relevant. And I keep trying what is it that is relevant right now, and I would say that is what drives me forward all the time.
I like one thing you mentioned is this feeling of still being day one. I think this is a very specific founder perspective or founder mindset that no matter how big your company is, you still feel like you're just getting started. It's just the beginning. There's so much more to come.
Yeah. I never thought about it that way, but it might be a founder perspective. It's certainly what I believe in, because when I look at where we are with Babel in the moment, there's so much to do. There's so much market out there. There's so much potential for building a better product. It can only be the early days. This can't be it.
And today, Marcus, we want to talk about the burning questions that probably every person who starts a company has. We want to talk about the founding team, co-founders, but also the early stage employees. We want to talk about the idea, but also about fundraising and then scaling up from there. So let's start with the first part, the co-founder and the team. Is it better to start a company as a solo founder or together with co-founders?
It depends, of course. I think statistically, solo founders are more successful, but I think that's also a self-selection bias because only few people have the backbone to do that, the whole thing alone. I would say if you have a choice, rather start with a team, because being alone is never the best choice if you have any.
Right.
If nobody wants to work with you, you'll have to do it alone.
Yeah. If you go for co-founders, is there any certain perfect number of the amount of co-founders, like 3 we often hear in our podcast? Would you say that there's a certain perfect number in terms of co-founders?
No, I usually don't believe in schematics that are repeatable because every company is different, every market is different, every problem is in a way different. I would say more than 4 is plenty. And less than 2 is just a solo founder.
Right,
so, yeah, 3 might be a good number. 4 might work. But, yeah, keep in mind, no founder team in the world keeps being that stable team forever. Every founder team at a certain point kind of disintegrates and splits up. And that's fine. That's not failure.
That's part of development also.
It's part of the development, absolutely.
So now we know co-founders are probably better to have a team to start. Now the big question is, where do I find my co-founders?
Yeah, I think the bad news is you better have them before you start. Because if you start looking for people, if you're already in the development of building your company, you don't know enough about them. It's quite a ride to build a company together. And I would say for everybody who thinks about building companies at some point in their life, keep people close that are worth working with. People you want to go with to Mars with, you want to change the world with. There are very few out there. And finding them is a lengthy process over time.
So very often, if you say that, people think, oh, I'm just going to start a company with my friends, maybe with family, or even my romantic partner. Is that something you'd advise people to do or to consider?
I would certainly not advise that. But it depends. Sometimes co-founders who are romantically involved can be very, very successful. There are cases there. Mm-hmm. I think it's important in any constellation where you have different layers of a relationship that you're absolutely open with each other, open about what's your motivation, open about what's your expectation and what's driving you, and don't tell the story that others want to hear.
Right. And if you decide to do that, to go for co-founders, but not with, you know, romantic partners or family members, where do you find them? Is it like past work colleagues or study friends? What would you recommend there? Where should you look for co-founders?
It depends. Very often you find them at university, if you go to a tech university, because, I mean, like it or not, the people you want to hang out with when you build a tech company are techies, right? So if you're not in tech yourself, then you might not want to find your co-founders around your business school or wherever you are. Mm-hmm. Very often, I found my co-founders at work. Yeah. That's usually pretty good because you see them working, mm-hmm. and you have an understanding how they approach problems, how they work. So wherever you can meet them in the subway, but I think you never meet them as, this is my co-founder, but this is a cool person, and with that person I want to do more. I think that's the initial thing. Yeah. And then at a certain point, there might be an opportunity to say, let's start something.
Absolutely. So having a past history together, ideally in a work context, is a great way to start off for a company.
For sure. Yes. Yes.
And what conversations should you actually have together before you then say, okay, now we start a company together? Because there are many things that you should discuss about, that you should have a conversation about to make sure that you're on the same page and don't run into big problems later down the road that you could have solved early on.
I think a main topic to clarify is, why are we doing this? Personally, what's your objective? And we all, I think, have a drive to tell ourselves and others stories that sound great. But these stories might not always be the harsh truth. And if I'm just in for the money, I better put that on the table right away. Yeah. And don't talk about making the world a better place or doing something for whatever. I think honesty and clarity is key. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly about the motivation. And what I would always advise people to find out early is, how many ego problems do the people you engage with have? How much do they care to be front and center, to be the first on the list, to be recognized, and so on? Because that's the most energy drain down the road if somebody has an ego issue.
What are some indicators? How can you find that out early enough before you start the company?
I think there's so many opportunities to, if you watch people, just how they behave, are they okay to be second in line? Are they okay to be overlooked here and there, to be not mentioned, and so on? Or do they need to say, oh, this was my idea, I was the one who started it, and so on? Do they have the urge to appear as larger than life? And it's observation, I think, that helps.
Once you have your co-founding team, of course, there are many tasks at hand, but at the same time, you also do a bit of everything. Nevertheless, are there any role splits or task splits that you would recommend amongst co-founders when you're starting out?
No, I think in the beginning, we're all generalists. I think in the best companies, in the very early days, everybody does everything and everybody understands everything. Differentiation comes later. Mm-hmm. And I think as a founder, I have to learn what matters in my company. And if it happens to be deep tech and I'm not a techie, I'm in for a ride. I have to understand a lot of what's going on. I can't just say, oh, I'm a business person and I can't be bothered with this. So I'm very much in the camp for everybody does everything in the early days. Yep. Of course, that changes later. And that's a very, very hard challenge for a lot of teams growing up, because what's true in the early days is, and what helps you in the early days, is toxic when you try to scale.
Yeah, that's a challenge by itself. We're going to also address that at the end of the conversation real quick. One thing that then changes, of course, is you are growing. You probably also do your first hires. Are there any specific roles that you see that are key to hire early on to grow a team?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't say you do key hires in the early days, usually. When you build up something, you need people who do the work. And you would probably take whoever is ready to do it. They don't have to stick with the company forever. So I think one advice I give to all founders is don't ever solve a problem you currently don't have. So don't hire somebody who might be instrumental three years down the road or even 12 months down the road. Hire people who are relevant right now, and they will change anyways. The people will change in their development, or they will go and others will come. Yeah. But in the early days, I don't think it's the time for key hires.
Absolutely. So now we talked about the founding team. Of course, it's also very relevant what problem you're solving, what your business idea is. So how important is this idea compared to the team? Is there one thing that is more important from your perspective?
I would say the idea is hugely important. It absolutely matters whether it's a good idea or not. But the problem is there's no way of finding out whether you're on a good idea or not. You just have to try. And it's even impossible to say, when do you know? And that's where entrepreneurship really hurts and where it's really tough to make the judgment call of, am I riding a dead horse? Or didn't I try hard enough? Should I try it the other way? That's such a personal question. And there's no right or wrong answer to that. And when it comes to the team, what you need is adaptability. You need a team that can change and that can modify the idea. Very often, the idea a company is successful with is different to the idea they actually started with. Yeah. If you try to execute the idea in the beginning that you had in the beginning, you very often lose. You have to adapt, you have to change, and you even have to change the team and the setup of the team. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a very interesting question, right? What has a higher chance of success, a mediocre team with a great idea or a fantastic team with a mediocre idea?
Well, I think the investor answer would be you need both. In reality, I think a fantastic team will adapt the idea. Mm-hmm. And if you have a fantastic idea and you are yourself adaptable, you might have the time to get the right team together. So if one of the two is outstandingly great, you have a fair chance. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you need to get to the right idea. You can't build a fantastic business out of a lame idea. What happens if you have a great team is you will sharpen and adapt the idea into something that really kicks ass. And that's how you can tell it's a great team.
There was one quote that came to mind when I saw this question, and it was from Derek Sivers, and he wrote, "Ideas are just a multiplier of execution." Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Yeah, I think the word execution doesn't work in a startup, in an early stage startup, because execution is kind of a waterfall idea. You have something and then you execute on it. But what happens in an early stage startup is you're kind of lost in a jungle and you find your way. That's not execution, that's survival. Yeah. And as I said, the idea is modified and changes, and what you think execution is changes as well. Mm-hmm. So I would say the number one success factor is adaptability. Yeah. How good are you to adapt to the challenges, and how good are you to understand what is a challenge and what is just something you have to ignore and power through?
Yeah. Before, you said you don't really know whether you're on the wrong path in terms of your idea or not. Let me ask it differently. When and how do you realize whether it's time to adapt the idea or not?
You don't.
You know?
You don't ever have an external help for that. Because, I mean, people might tell you this is a dead horse, but how many of the great businesses you see today
exactly
have gotten that advice?
Yeah.
Right? So that is where you as an entrepreneur really matter. And there's no help. You're alone in that, or the team is alone in making that decision. Is this horse dead or not? You don't know. You never know. And you can even have some initial traction, and then the whole thing falls off a cliff because it was an artificial effect or just a good phase or whatever. So you don't know. That's what the whole thing is about.
Would you say this also is very much related to just gut feeling and also personal motivation to continue down that path?
Yeah, and that's again something why I think honesty and clear reflection matters a lot. Because if you don't have a lot of experience, your gut feel is often worth nothing.
No.
And it doesn't feel less evident and less strong of a feeling. Mm-hmm. But I think being honest about how good is my judgment here and how good is my experience matters a lot. Mm-hmm. And then all the things come into play, like how long can you afford to do this? How much fun do you have doing it? Is your relationship breaking apart because of your building your company? That might be an indicator to focus on something else. So it's a complex environment and it's an impossible decision.
Right.
So you can only take it the best way you can at that moment.
It's hard to grasp that, right? Because it's like very helpful advice, but also not very helpful advice because it's complex. There's no easy answer.
Yeah.
But it's also just reality that it's not black and white. It's a really big gray area.
I think that's the tough reality of building a business and of what we can call entrepreneurship. And that might be actually the core of entrepreneurship, that you have to make these judgment calls. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurship is not about working hard, about trying new things, whatever. Entrepreneurship is about suffering this and sustaining this pressure of, I don't know whether the path I'm on is leads to anything. And I still go it, or ultimately I call it off.
Right. And along the way, if you found your co-founding team, you found the idea that you want to work on, at least for now, eventually down the road, you also think about getting investors on board. So should I immediately go for a pre-seed round and get investors on board very early on?
I'm always in a camp of bootstrapping a business as long as possible, but it so much depends on what you build, right? So if you're in deep tech, if you're, it's really different than if you build hardware or med tech or whatever. Sometimes you just need money to build stuff, especially if it's material, if it's real world. But as long as you can stay bootstrapped, because that gives you control and that keeps you focused on what matters, and what matters is building the product, getting the first customers on board. And there are some early stage founders who very much focus on getting funding and being attractive to investors. But investors are just accelerators. They're not your customers. Yeah. They don't really matter. Sorry to all investors listening.
And one question, of course, you invest a lot of time and energy into your startup, especially even more so in the early phase. Should you also invest your own capital into your company?
As much as you can afford to lose it, yes. So, I mean, it's a high-risk thing. And if you have money sitting there that you can afford to not have, invest it. Yeah. If it would be your ruin, you better not do it. Mm-hmm. And that's the advice. And then a major rule of entrepreneurship kicks in, and that is listen to good advice and then take your decision and follow the advice or not. That's There are always exceptions. There's always situations where it makes sense to take all the risks in the world.
Right. We talked before about family, friends, and we also in the investment sense call them fools. It's not a good idea to have them as co-founders. Should you still take their money if they want to invest?
Again, it depends. I think it matters that you're clear in managing expectations. Anybody who puts money into an early stage startup just has a high risk of losing it all. And I think that is, everybody has to be okay with that, really okay with that. And it's often a relationship thing. So if it's family money, it can be really, really difficult. And it can make your life really, really miserable. So it depends on how many choices you have. If you can take money from foreigners, from people you don't know, then do that. Just take money from strangers rather from family than from family, and ideally take money from customers.
That's a good one. But often you then end with VCs or with business angels. Do you have a preference to go for one of these at the early stage?
No. As long as you don't expect any of those to really solve your problems, they will give you money. Some have a good network. Some can give good advice. Some give terrible advice. I would always look for people who you can work with and who you trust. Because they might be around longer than you think. And especially if the company gets bigger, and if it's a lot of money you're talking about, then you want people who are reliable and who have strong ethics.
Yeah. And one thing that, of course, you have to ask yourself when you're fundraising, or at least think about getting investors on board, is what is sort of the story that we tell them? And many investors, they want to hear the story, even if it's not true, that you are on your path to build a unicorn, a billion-dollar valuation company. Is that something that everyone should strive towards as a goal?
I think that those are two different questions. If you build a deck for investors, you have to show what is the ultimate potential of what you're building, right? And I think you have to be absolutely honest whether you want to build something big or something that is sustainable on a lower basis, right? But the extrapolation, how large can this be, absolutely matters to investors.
Yeah.
The motivation to just, now we're founding a unicorn, is to me a terrible idea. Because I think if we build something, we should build something meaningful, something that really makes sense, something we want to build. Mm-hmm. And there's no way of telling, is this going to be $1 billion, yes or no? And it's a weird measure. Like, what's $1 billion? Is that cool or not? I don't know. I'd say $1 billion in revenue is cool. But even that might just not be what matters to you. And I would personally much rather work with and invest in people who want to build something that works and that's meaningful.
And that is also very closely related to their personal goals and vision that you are rowing in the same direction in the end.
Yeah, for sure.
One thing that also when you talk to investors, they often sort of want to see is that you're working full time on your startup. Is that something you should do from day one, or is it okay to start part time and then progress more towards a full time role?
I mean, starting a business is not a side job. Yeah. It's not something you can do in the evenings or on a weekend. On the other hand, we all have different chances and different opportunities. Some of us have worked in well-paying jobs before, have families with money, and can sustain a build-up time without getting paid.
Yeah.
But there's people who can't do that. And shouldn't they ever start their own company? Of course not. It's the advice is always you need to go in full time. And then again, if there's no way to do that in your personal situation, you have to find out otherwise.
You mentioned at the beginning, you know, now we talked about co-founders, investors, and the business idea. You mentioned at the beginning that things always change. You might not end up working on the same idea or not even of the same team. So these things change. How fast do they change? Because at the beginning, everything seems simple, right? All the founders have the same shares, very equal contribution to the company. But at one point, that might change. One co-founder might drop out, one might reduce, one might want to sell shares. How often does that change in reality?
All the time. All the time and faster than you want it to change. And I mean, any early stage company feels like everything is falling apart all the time. Success from the inside doesn't feel like this is great, we're going on, into the right direction. So there's these moments where you feel, oh, this might actually be working. But most of the time, it's kind of problems coming your way from all directions. What was true yesterday is not true anymore. There's conflicts, there's friction, there's crisis. And I would say it doesn't feel like change because there's no stability. It's not that, we have been going like that all the time and now we change. Every day is kind of a new challenge if you try to build something that wasn't there before.
Do you have any recommendation or tip on how to manage that on a company, but also on a very personal founder level? Mm. Because that constant change can also really, you know, take a toll on you.
It can. It's different for different personality types. There's some of us who thrive in stress and change, and others who need more stability. Mm-hmm. I think if you have a founder team, you can distribute roles a bit along those lines and can give people who need more stability a little shielding from the mess that happens every day. Overall, it's a learning. When I work with founders, I try to find out what's your way of getting to the stability that you need. Mm-hmm. Is that your private life? Is that taking time out? Is it organizing your working day? Is it the mindset you work with? There's really different dimensions that work for different people. And I think for all of us, it's a very, very personal journey to find out how can I work with this, make the best of it, and thrive.
It's also here the self-awareness that is key to be brutally honest with yourself and with your team.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that matters so much to be clear about what are you doing and why are you doing it.
Yeah. When you're then growing as a company, you hire more employees, everything gets exponentially also more complex because you have so many more relations to manage. And what often happens then is that communication breaks down. Mm. How you used to make decisions or communicate before doesn't work anymore. How can you fix that? How can you handle that growth on the communication level?
Well, it's usually one of these things where you don't fix the problem before you have it, and suddenly you see, oh shit, I should have done this before.
Yeah.
And that's totally okay. That's like all founders I know think almost all the time, I should have done this before. The truth is, no, you shouldn't. You shouldn't have done this before. Now's the right moment. Mm-hmm. And how do you get it together? Over-communicate, as I think the first rule. Yeah. So if you think you've beaten it to death, you told everybody 20 times, then you're getting close to being clear, especially if the organization grows a little. And then if you have managers already, you need to train them in communication. You need to make clear what their role is and what the channels are. So in the beginning, rules are your enemy. You have to break rules all the time and pave your own path. From a certain point onwards, you have to make rules for everybody to understand what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you have sheer chaos.
You've seen the growth yourself at Babbel in your own company. And I can imagine it's quite a different role, right? From building the company as an early stage founder to having multiple employees and quite a significant company size. Your role also changes. You become a manager yourself to a certain degree. You're not building as much anymore as you used to. You're now managing people and processes. Is that also a bit of a depressing journey to manage that?
For some it is. Two of my co-founders were people like that. They're more early stage founders. They want to start something new. They don't like meetings. They don't like structure so much. And there's others who feel it's another challenge. It's another frontier. I've managed to write code. I've managed to build a product. I've managed to get the first customers on board. And now my challenge is to become a manager and a leader. And that's a very, very personal challenge. And for some founders, it's an exciting journey. Mm-hmm. And it's not frustrating at all. For me, it was a fantastic journey to be on. It was painful, of course. But in a way, I got better in giving up stuff, giving up access to the code, to the database, to whatever, to doing stuff myself. Every step I took was slightly less painful than the step before. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a personal journey that I felt very enriching.
Amazing. So what we also want to do now is, if you have any questions for Marcus, we have a Slido prepared. I hope we can show them here on the screen. Perfect. So scan the QR code or just go to slido.com and enter the number. If you want to ask Marcus any questions, enter them right now. We're going to continue with some rapid fire questions and then we see what questions that we got from the audience. So the rapid fire questions, I either give you different choices to choose from or a short question you have to answer in one sentence. Yeah. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The first one, Apple or Google?
Both. Google for feature, Apple for design.
Clear one. Morning person or night owl?
Oh, definitely a morning person, given the day starts at 11 or later.
Okay. Bootstrapping or VC money?
Bootstrapping.
Coffee or tea?
First tea, then coffee.
Exit, profitability, or an IPO at the famous stock exchange?
First profitability, then possibly an IPO.
And the last one, Berlin or Zurich?
Sorry, it's Berlin. By all means. Yeah.
But you like to visit Zurich, so...
I love Zurich, and it's great to be here. And if you're independently wealthy and look for a great place to live, Zurich is definitely a great place. If you're going either to build a startup or to have the best party of your life, go to Berlin.
Perfect. So we got a few questions. First one, any plans to start another company?
No. My mission with Babbel is by far not finished. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot less operationally, but as I said, it's the early days. And with what we call Wachstumsbegleitung, I'm working with founders and companies. And for me, that's my next step of development, to be more at the sideline, to be with people I can admire and can share their journey with. But that said, I always said I will never start a company. So don't give too much about me not wanting to do that.
There's a good follow-up question. You said you're only at the beginning with Babbel. In which cases or areas do you still want to grow with the company?
In all areas, especially in the number of customers we have and in the depth of service we provide. Mm-hmm. Language learning or digital language learning is a problem that hasn't been fully cracked. I mean, Babbel is the product that sucks least of all the products in the market. Yeah. I'm very sure about that, and by a wide margin. But it's still so much we need to do. We need to integrate learning experiences, and we have to guide people really through their learning journey. And that is, it's just beginning. And there's so much technology coming up that will completely change that market and the experience for users. Yeah, it's early days.
And thinking about leaving your operational role, was it hard for you to leave the CEO role or the operational role on a very personal level?
Well, it was my decision. So was it hard to take the decision? No. Was it hard to do it? Oh, God, yes. I mean, the first month after I quit, I didn't come to the office. I just did nothing. And that was probably one of the hardest phases in my life. Nobody cared whether I got out of bed or not. Yeah. After having these days with like 10 hours back-to-back meetings and everything I did mattered, it was a terrible challenge. And I would advise anybody who gives up their job to go through that and not to have your next job lined up, because I learned so much about myself in that time. Yeah. It's incredible.
Have you ever regretted stepping down from the operational role looking back?
I mean, there's moments where I long for some things that I did or had. But overall, no. Overall, I'm really, really happy. But I'm not a regretting person myself. I wouldn't know anything I ever regretted that really mattered. So I'm probably telling myself the right stories.
And you look forward.
My past. And I'm happy with where I am. Yeah.
I also saw multiple questions popping up asking about the differences between Duolingo and Babbel. Of course, because Duolingo has a Swiss CTO, so people are interested. What are the differences? How do you compare?
It's a very different approach to a company and to language learning. So Babbel is a lot more about people who really want to learn a language. So we have more than 150 people who are teachers and didactics experts. And our focus is way more on that area than on keeping people occupied, keeping them in a game. And so our audience is also very different. So our customers are rather a bit older. They are usually more engaged and more committed. And very often people try one and then use the other if they get more serious.
Right. We also talked about finding the right co-founders. There was one question: if you cannot code yourself, should you invest time into looking for a technical co-founder or just bother and start learning coding yourself?
I think if you want to build a tech company, you should know quite a bit about tech, and that doesn't work without at least basic coding skills. I think
knowing how to code matters. At Babbel, all of the four founders wrote code in the beginning, and my last lines of code were replaced a year ago or so, which was a horror. I mean, the horror was, oh God, this code still exists. Yeah. When I heard they were purging it. But no, apps by all means. You need if it's a tech company, you need to be knowledgeable in that area.
And there was also a question. It's probably hard because there's no single answer to that. But if there's just one advice that you would give to aspiring entrepreneurs,
I would always revert to: don't solve a problem that you don't have. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most important thing, because very many founders look at things down the road, like localization. We do this in 5 languages. We do this in 12 countries, yeah. Whatever. If it's not your problem right now, just ignore it. Let future you
bother about it.
Yeah. And there was one more growth challenge. If you get on new responsibilities that you don't like with the growth of the company, what do you do? Do you just suck it up and try to make the best out of it, or do you try to find another solution?
That's a, for me personally, that's a tough question because I never thought about tasks in a way, do I like them or not? But rather in a way, do they make sense or not?
Okay.
And I think everybody who's really involved in their company would look at things like that. It's not, oh, my day has all these fun meetings today. I'm looking forward to that. Versus, oh, I need to do all this stuff that's cumbersome and hard. No, it's if it makes sense for what I'm trying to build, I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think suck it up.
And maybe the last question. People, of course, are also interested. How many languages have you learned yourself through Babbel?
From scratch, probably only Spanish. I vastly improved my Italian and got my French skills to a better place. But admittedly, most of that, or much of that, happened after I stepped down from the CEO job.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're in at the helm of the company and trying to use your own product, it's a nightmare. Because every time you open the product, you run into something that's, oh, why is this? Why don't we have that? And yeah. You end up in your email or Slack and contacting people, why is this and why doesn't that work? It's a distraction, and it keeps reminding you of problems that you still have.
Has this gotten easier for you now without the operational role, or is it still the same?
No, it has become a lot easier. It's not completely easy, but it's way more... I can get into a mindset where I say, I shouldn't get involved anymore, and that's helpful.
Fantastic. Marcus, thank you so much for making all the way to Zurich. Thank you all for the great questions and enjoy your evening. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.